a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com, live here inside the MDN studios. I heard last week was, if you felt anything, I'm sure you felt just like all of us down there in Florida felt watching that game. So I can only imagine what I can only imagine what last week's roundtable was like, but I am happy to report a smiling Brian Cook this morning.
What are you talking about?
You're smiling.
Well, I
that's because he fist bumped a cow.
I did fist bump a cow. There was a cow in the lobby. It's not a real cow. It's a person in a cow suit, but I fist bumped him.
My high school mascot. We were the cows. We were the Wildcats, but for some reason there was a traditional passed down from history a cow costume.
You went to South Park High School.
But it was good because the old nickname for the school before the merger, they were the Spartans, and they had a cow costume. They kept the cow costume. I don't understand the history of it. It's just funny. That's all. And apparently it's like National Milk Day or something. So I'm gonna go
talking too
later.
Much, Ira.
That's what I do apparently.
Joining us on the phones, the veteran of, and I thought about Craig Ross,
did you get arrested?
No.
He's a lawyer.
First of all, Craig, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Craig, did you hear my interview with Steve Clarkson, the quarterback's coach? Did you happen to hear it?
I did not. I missed it. I'm sorry.
So you did not hear him. For those who don't know who Steve Clarkson is, you didn't listen to the interview earlier this week. He's quarterback coach for Ben Roethlisberger and a number of other guys. Also, Wilton Spade, he was Wilton's quarterback coach. He was Shea Patterson's quarterback coach. And describing Shea Patterson, he said, you know, he reminds me a bit of Fran Tarkenton.
Oh, God.
And I said, oh, Craig Ross is doing cartwheels somewhere.
Oh,
man.
My God.
If you look at his tape, you do see some of that.
Who was the guy who played for the Browns in like the 70s that you were going on about?
In the 70s, the Browns probably had no one in the 70s of any consciousness. I talked about Roman Gabriel way back.
Yeah, that
he
guy.
He played with the Rams.
Same thing.
Yeah, same thing. He couldn't be more different than Tarkenton. Tarkenton was not, he was more smallish, but he was incredibly elusive and fun to watch. And they also ran an offense that I thought would have been interesting for Michigan this year, but Michigan.
Well, so Craig,
to go that direction.
I just felt like, man, this validates Craig Ross's sort of random, obscure kind of.
Well, Frank Tarkenton isn't exactly obscure.
Well, for people, for millennials, he is.
Old as dirt.
Yeah, for millennials,
but
he
Craig's
is.
But Craig's the oldest.
How many millennials know who Frank Tarkenton is? I mean. I'd venture a guess, very many.
Is there like a Frank Tarkenton team on Madden? Because then they might. That would be
one of those all-time team player guys.
Yeah,
those games didn't start until, you know, I was well into my dotage, and so I can hardly, you know, I never played any of them. What we played as kids, maybe someone out there will remember this, is something called photoelectric football. And what you would do is you had like this cardboard box with a light bulb coming underneath it, and then the offense would have a sequence of plays that were paper, essentially, or light cardboard. And the defense would have a sequence of plays. And then one guy would put his play on, and the other guy would put his play on, and then you'd see how far down the field the guy was tackled by where these various lines intersected. It was like having games that were, you know, stones, essentially. But it was fun when we were kids.
You play the baseball one that's like you it's like a disc and you have to like spin it to see like what the result of the at bat is.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Yeah. To me, the best.
This had higher tech, you know. It had a light bulb.
The best football game of all time was the electric football game where you got the pieces. Oh. And you put them on there, and you turn them on, and you see if your guy
can score. And they rotate.
Oh, man, that's the best football game of all time.
Super Tecmo Bowl, that's the right answer.
That's number two.
I'm sorry to miss such relevant conversation before I got here, guys.
Yeah. We were just waiting for you, Ed. We were waiting for Ed Fang for the Power Rank. Ed, how are you?
I'm great. My apologies, guys.
Yeah, glad that you could join us. So let's talk coaches for a moment. We've seen a couple be made official. I don't know if you've covered any of the, if you covered any of these guys in your conversation last week, but Dan Enos officially in the fold. Wide receivers coach for now.
For now.
If he becomes if he gets the coordinator tag, then obviously he gets a significant pay boost. But that was listed explicitly in his contract. If you get the coordinator tag, then this will be your salary.
Well, he won't get the coordinator tag until his Arkansas contract runs out. So he's got a buyout, so he's super cheap for Michigan right now. So that's probably an eventuality that's more for down the road than this year, I would guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a part of this also has to do with the your current coordinator contingent and what happens with them. Right. I mean, there's I think the rumors that really picked up some steam have made some fans feel like there's an inevitability to the departure.
When Feldman starts talking about Pep Hamilton going back to the Raiders, like, that's probably going to happen. Feldman doesn't like just throw stuff out there.
He's not like those NFL guys that said Harbaugh would never come here.
He's not. I mean, that's like that. Usually, like, that's like the, you know, unless you break it.
I'll be very, very clear, because I know that there were rumors for the past couple of weeks that he had a deal with the NFL team done. If that's true, I just hadn't heard that. I hadn't heard that to be the case.
Sure.
Hadn't heard that, his departure was imminent, that something was definitely in the fold. And if the Raiders thing is the case, then that certainly would have to be post John Gruden getting hired, right? So that would make it sound like it's something that is recently, the past week or so developing. So
yeah, I don't know if I would take that job if I was Pep Hamilton, because that's going to be a train wreck.
Like, well, you think there any more so than any other
John
NFL
Gruden
job?
It hasn't been in coaching any like more recently than Herm Edwards.
Oh, but he's so much more attached to the game.
But the market says
doing like TV is like whatever.
No, but I'm not talking. But he does more than TV. He has like this yearly sort of convention,
sure. QB camp,
and not just the QB camp. I'm talking about where he brings in a bunch of coaches.
Yeah.
And they just sit and they break down film for like a week. They go over all these teams and all these schemes.
You don't sit on the sidelines for 15 years and then go take a contract from the Raiders.
No, wait, $100 million over 10 years.
Yeah, and that, I'm sure like he got a big contract. But John Gruden is not going to put in like the 80-hour work week that you got.
You don't think he?
John Gruden is a goblin who talks on television.
All he did was
sleep in his office and like for 2 hours and work 22 hours. That was his reputation.
Hey, if that was true, he would have been in coaching 10 years ago.
Maybe you wanted to spend time with his kids.
No, it's like the guy in The Wire who gets out of jail. And like he like the game ain't in me anymore. That's John Gruden, except he's like trying to like murder somebody for no reason.
I don't know. I don't know if his work ethic matters, man. The NFL is tough.
Yeah, he's like that guy in The Wire. What's his name?
His defense stinks.
Guy who made the boxing thing.
I would be more concerned with
it's killing me.
Was that Cuddy?
With him actually I would be more concerned with him and his ability to actually connect with a team of players, and not just a few quarterbacks that he trains, but an entire team.
Also, it's like the Raiders.
The time spent thing, he'll.
Well, but think about this, Sam. Though he has enough people skills to get $100 million contract after being out of coaching for 9 years. He's got that many relationships in the game. Like that just doesn't happen, right?
No, it's one of those things that just kind of takes a life of its own. Every coaching rumor for the last 15 years is like, oh, it's going to be John Gruden, and it's like, he's not that great a coach. He wasn't that great a coach when he was an actual
coach. He won the Super Bowl, Brian.
Yeah, a lot of guys win the Super Bowl. Trent Dilfer won the Super Bowl.
But his last 5 years, he was well below 500.
Yeah.
But he won the Super Bowl.
He won the Super Bowl, guys.
So that means he's good enough for the Lions.
Hell yeah, he'd be good enough for the Lions. Absolutely he would be.
That's going to be a fiasco.
Look, Brian, I don't disagree with you that they are.
Oh, it's going to be a fiasco.
Well, you don't disagree with that?
No.
Here's what I don't disagree with. I don't disagree that there are some concerns with him being out of the game for such a long period of time. I do disagree about the concern about time that he's going to put into it. I mean, that was his thing. Ira is 100% correct. He had this reputation for never leaving the office, literally never leaving the office, sleeping for weeks at a time in his office. That's how much he was
a coach.
Yeah.
And then he had a lot of nice dinners for 15 years. And that
I believe it's nine, but yeah, I think
the game ain't in him anymore.
We'll see. We'll certainly see, but
open a boxing
certainly
rink.
from Bruce Feldman put it out there, the tweet that we're referencing. Why are we talking about John Gruden? Because Bruce Feldman said, "Don't be shocked."
I've had this take for like 15 years, like ready. So yeah,
don't be nice, shocked if Gruden goes after
For Brian to even spend a cycle of his brain thinking about an NFL thing,
well, that's pretty impressive. It's not really an NFL thing, because every time a college opening came open, it was like, oh, we're going to go get John Gruden. Like, Notre Dame's going to like, we're going to get John Gruden. I was like, please do. I want to see John Gruden recruit.
Hey, can we get back to Dan Enos?
No.
Yeah, so what do you think about Dan Enos?
I went and dug up some numbers at Arkansas, and their offense was really good his first year there. But that's when he had Brandon Brandon Allen. Mm-hmm. So Brandon Allen's a backup quarterback in the NFL. He was pretty good. His kid brother took over the last 2 years, and the offense has steadily declined, hence leading to Bielema and Enos getting fired this past year. So, that's kind of the trajectory. That doesn't make me excited about life exactly.
If you bring it into rushing offense and passing offense, it's kind of odd because they – have a really, really good year his first year. They're the second in S&P Plus. His second year, they kind of drop off to about 40th, and they're a good passing offense and a bad rushing offense. Then this year, they're a top 10 rushing offense, and they bench Allen, and they're going with a freshman for part of the season at quarterback, and their passing offense falls off a cliff, but they're still like 40th overall when you account for strength of schedule. And like, is that so bad in the SEC West when you're playing Alabama?
Yes, because if it's schedule adjusted, it is bad.
You're schedule adjusted, but you're also like playing from way behind in a talent level.
Yeah, but schedule adjusted means you account for that. And if you're 40th, no, I mean, and 48th,
I mean, you account for the fact that you played Alabama, but you're not accounting for the fact that you're Arkansas. And like, what kind of level of success can you expect as Arkansas playing against the murderer's row? That
Toledo's had a top 25 offense.
Looking
last year,
at their stats in 2016, they had the SEC regular season rushing leader and the SEC regular season passing leader as well, and Raleigh Williams and Austin Allen. He was able to get some production. Now both of those guys were hurt in 17, so that was obviously a factor as well.
I mean, they had an offensive line problem kind of similar to Michigan's, so they had Frank Ragnow, who's an All-American type center. They have Hjalte Froholt, who recruitniks might remember, who's Danish, and man who like toured the United States and's like, I want to go to Arkansas. And I was like, oh, that is not what I expected.
Michigan didn't expect it either. They had Hjalte Froholt,
and he became an All-SEC guard this year. But they really didn't have any tackles. They couldn't pass protect, and that kind of. Submarine their whole season. So.
I mean, their whole line is the concept of get 330-pound guys and mash the run game, right?
Well, I mean, their passing game was excellent in Enos's first 2 years. So,
okay. You
know, the point that I was trying to get across when I posted about Enos is that, you know, he's a college lifer and he's a pro style college lifer. And how many of those do you have out there these days?
Right.
I mean, like, you don't want an NFL coach because all NFL coaches are bad at being in college. And you don't want a spread coach because that's not really a fit with what Jim Harbaugh does. So your pool's pretty limited. And to have a guy that seems pretty respected in the SEC, like Enos, has a decent track record. There was a Fox article about how the first person Kirby Smart wanted to call when he got the Georgia job was Enos, but Enos had a non-compete in the SEC, so he couldn't take the job. So,
and this isn't the first time that Michigan expressed interest in Enos either, by the way.
So, I did not know that.
Yeah. So, you know, the thing to me that, you know, a lot of fans are hung up on is, you know, for most, their worst case scenario is if neither coordinator, current coordinator, leaves.
Right.
You have to, you know, I think you have to accept that as a possibility. But in so doing, you also have to realize, and this is what my strong belief, that regardless of what Enos's title is, if it, just even if there's he doesn't get the coordinator tag, his influence from a game planning perspective will absolutely. I believe strongly that it absolutely will be there.
Well, so you bring in Greg Fry, and then you kind of try to let him control the run game for half the year, and it's just not a fit. Like, he's coming from a spread tradition. He's an outside zone, inside zone kind of guy, and you can't run all three base plays. You can't run outside, inside zone, and power.
No, you can't.
So, you know, they're trying to run a lot of inside zone, and Michigan kind of sucks at it, and then they move to a split, and then they go heavy, heavy on the power stuff late in the year. So what did they do? They just rich-rotted their offense. Except Rich Rod did it with his defense constantly. But so they bring in a guy who is not a fit with what the head coach wants to do. They do it for a little while, and then they discard it midseason because it's not working. So that is not going to be an issue with Dan Enos, because Dan Enos' conception of offense is right with Jim Harbaugh's. So, you know, as a fit goes, I think it's a good hire. He's obviously a respected coach. His numbers aren't great, but they're also maybe understandably so. Because I don't think Brett Bielema was really bringing in bumper crops his last couple of years. So he'll have more of a talent advantage at Michigan.
For sure. I mean, Don Brown didn't exactly have a talent advantage at BC, too. And he had spectacular defenses.
Don Brown.
Right. I mean, I am saying he's not Don Brown. That's where I'm kind of
there is no Don looking Brown.
There is a Don Brown. He's on the staff.
No, there's only the conception.
Let's go to a break. I expect that stuff from Craig, really, Brian.
What? I mean, come on.
Like the philosophical, we're not going to a break?
We are going to a break. It is 9:25 on the 30. I just, you know, whenever you guys
fist bump the cow,
you start going back and forth, I kind of just let the tape roll. Let's see where it goes, right?
I wish he said move, but he just kind of was silent.
We got to get to a break. We'll get to the phones as well. Sean and Indy, you're up first with a question for the roundtable. We'll get to it on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. All right, so guys, we have the roundtable back with us. We have Brian Cook, Ed Fang, and, of course, Craig Ross on the phone. You know, yep. Before we get to the phones, real quick, Craig, we'll start with you. Your thoughts on the national championship game. And it was one of the best games I've seen. And what an unbelievable performance by Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah, it was a good game. I think it was punctuated by the phenomenal officiating by Don Capron and his crew. And they once again showed why the Big Ten is what the Big Ten is. I mean, I don't get it.
How could I have guessed?
I saw good officiating in our game, and you know, I thought the ACC officials by and large did okay. I mean, they didn't call anything, but that's okay. I mean, at least it was fairly even-handed. I don't understand how the Big Ten can hire the people they hire and throw them out there week after week. But that's all I'm going to say. I had a hard time watching the game because of two SEC schools that I don't care much about. So, but then in terms of the quality of football, I think it was a high quality game.
What did you guys think?
Daron Payne is a scary individual who scares me.
Good and he football. Got back on the field. He got back on the field.
What do you mean?
Oh, I mean, I thought you were talking about the guy who punched his coach.
No. He's the defensive tackle who was just
Payne
killing
is a beast.
I watched the
I don't think they could block him with five players in that game.
I was watching the coach's room, which is interesting, but it also kind of takes away from the immediacy of it. So, like,
did you see the play where he, like, he pushed the center, like, 5 yards
in
the backfield?
Oh, yeah. I was watching that guy, and I was like, I'd like to put that guy next to Mo Hurst. That would be nice.
That would be
that would be the best defensive tackle pairing, like, in a long time.
Yeah, so he obviously dominated the second half for the Alabama defense, and then, you know, just put a true freshman in the national championship game and tell him to go make up a 2-touchdown deficit, and he's like, yeah, this is what I do. So that's what the expectation is for Michigan every year going forward, is to win the national championship no matter what, because Alabama did it once.
I see you've been dealing with that a lot on MLB.
I've been on Twitter.
Yeah, so I was making fun of Nick Saban for pulling his quarterback after 8 pass attempts in the first half, and backtracked on that by the end of the game.
You were making fun of him? You thought that at the time? You thought that was a questionable decision?
Hurts threw 8 passes in the first half. He missed that. He missed the touchdown the first drive for sure. But everything else was a dink or a dunk. Really no attempts to go down the field. And I think his decision was like, look, we're down 13.
You see what Scott Frost said about it?
No.
He was like, I knew Tua was a better quarterback, but it took Alabama 12 games to figure it out. And I was like, holy crap. This guy is coming in hot.
Look, man.
Like, Harbaugh has nothing on Scott Frost.
I figured at halftime that there was no other choice. You needed at that point a quarterback that could threaten down the football field. The way that Georgia was playing them, this is a good offensive line Alabama had. We can agree, right? They had good tailbacks, right? Jalen Hurts is a threat running the football. He had 50 yards rushing, obviously 47 of those came on one play. But none of that was there because Georgia started cheating the position. Oh, this guy can't throw. We're going to squat on everything short. It made the pressure more intense that they were able to get into the backfield. There was just no breathing room on offense if you can't threaten down the football field. And they made they came to the conclusion that this guy is not, especially when he couldn't hit that, the wide open guy in the end zone and the defensive back falls down. That would have been it for me. And I think it was it for them.
I mean, if the game's 13-13 at half.
But it wasn't.
Tua's not. No, I get that.
That's correct.
And then
good point, Sam.
Well, and it was interesting to see the kid's mistakes, too, right? Because the pick was awful. Should have never thrown it. And taking that sack on the first play in overtime is just mind-bogglingly bad. And he just throws a rope in. Here's perfect pass to end the game.
You know what Saban had to say? You can't get worse than 0 points. You can't get worse than 0 points. There's only upside now because you have a guy that can at least threaten down the football field, and you hope, you know, he's going to make some mistakes. He's a true freshman, but can he make more plays than mistakes?
Well, the coach
made more plays than mistakes.
Was really interesting because they have as the second drive of the second half, and it's all RPOs, and you know you've got Gundy there, and you've got someone there, so they're like just calling it out, and as they're coming out back on the field, the offense after they score that touchdown drive, someone's like, is Georgia going to go too high? Because if they go too high, they can combat what Tua just did on the previous drive. They do. And then Alabama starts being able to run the ball with Najee Harris. And so that drive at the beginning of the second half where they just run down the field with a bunch of RPOs changed the Georgia defense and opened it up enough for them to get to overtime. And possibly win that game in regulation if their kicker wasn't a complete yutz.
His flat foot slipped, right? I mean,
he missed 2 field goals in that game, and it was on turf.
Yeah.
If your flat foot slips on turf indoors, that's on you as a kicker. I got no sympathy for you. If it's like outside, that's on grass, like, okay, we could talk. But
yeah, I was shocked I was shocked that they were able to win that game after that big sack. I just said, there's no way the kicker is going to make a field. He's done. The kicker was not going to make a field goal.
Yeah,
deep. They were in cover 2 again, and absolutely. I mean, the one place where you aren't going to complete a pass is where they completed the freaking pass.
Well, but didn't the safety bite towards the middle?
Tua looked him off like he was Tom freaking Brady.
Yeah. Well, you had that was on the corner. It was on the corner.
No
to
redirect.
Me. Exactly. It was on the corner because the safety was threatened down the seam. There was a guy, whoever, I don't know if it was the tight end or the slot, who beat his man up the seam. The safety had to honor that. If the corner gets a redirect and jams that guy a little bit, it gives the safety time to get over. He let the guy run straight down the football
field. But still,
field.
Like, that's the dumbest play call from a defense that I've seen since the 2005 Minnesota game. But we won't get into that. But you're running cover two. Like, you could put that cornerback who's on the backside of a trips formation. You can put that cornerback in, just man everywhere he goes, and then that doesn't happen. And what happens? Are you concerned about the boundary flat on second and a million yards with a kicker who can't hit the broadside of a barn? Like,
I think they thought that there was no way that the quarterback would try with second and 26.
Second and 26. Well, you got to get 26 yards, so right. Go freaking get it.
And boy, he went right where you thought most quarterbacks don't even. I mean, Joey Galloway kind of made this point. I hate to reference Joey Galloway. I hate to. I apologize for doing that. But he said, you know, most quarterbacks when they see two high safeties, they completely ignore the sideline because most quarterbacks can't make that throw. And he said, I would tell my quarterbacks, look at me. I'm gonna win. And I'm going to win down the sideline. He said most safeties, are slow to leave the hash. So this safety was slow to leave the hash. It really, that wasn't the case, Joey. That wasn't all that happened there. But the point that I took from it was most quarterbacks aren't going to go there where Tua Tagovailoa went right there. And to your point, Brian, he did everything. He looked the safety off. He saw his man. He saw the corner. Not get a redirect. He saw the receiver be wide open. He saw the safety not get over, and he made a great throw.
I don't think he saw any of that.
You think? What, you don't think he saw any?
No, he wasn't looking at it. He was just like, "I have faith."
He said he saw.
He was lying because he was looking at the other side of the field.
He said. Oh, I saw cover two. I looked the safety off.
He saw cover two. I believe that.
He said, "I looked the safety
off." Definitely
and I
did over, that.
And then I saw my guy. He was wide open down the football field, and I threw.
Yeah, he didn't know that the corner didn't get a redirect.
Well, that's the only way that he gets that wide open. Okay,
he saw cover two. Yes. He looked the safety off. He knew where he was going pre-snap, and that's pretty ballsy for a freshman.
Very much so. Well, anyway.
I don't think it matters. Didn't UCF win the national championship anyway?
Yes, they did, and they paid their coaches,
so,
which I love. Yeah. They paid their coaches bonuses.
Let's give more money to the coaches.
Because you're standing behind the fact you're declaring yourselves national champions.
$2.5 million. Poor. Why does UCF even have those like clauses in their contracts?
Right? That's a great point.
Does Toledo have national championship?
Yes,
like
they should.
Probably do.
They should.
They probably do.
Oh, man. Let's go to the phone. 734-998-1050. And let's start off in Indy and talk to Sean. Sean, what's up?
What's up, fellas? Hey, I just got a point and a couple questions. So, Brian, as crazy as it sounds, actually made me feel better about Dan Enos after his talk. Talking about passing game was excellent. Yeah, and he said that if he had a good QB, his offense really did well. So I think we have two or three good QBs on the roster now. So that's a positive in my mind. And then the comment about Greg Frey took over and it wasn't going well because of the schematic differences leads me to my question. So who will actually take over the O-line coaching? And then my last point is that after listening to Steve Lawrence and do his podcast and going over our wide receiver depth, I feel pretty positive going into the season. So if we can figure this online thing out, I think that, we're definitely going to be better than we were last year. So just wanted to get your comments on that.
Well, I mean, if Tim Drevno is still around next year, he'll be the offensive line coach.
I think he will be. I don't understand why people think Tim Drevno is going. I think he's going to be here. So,
well, I think they want Tim Drevno to go because this year had the worst pass protection of any Michigan team in the past
million
years.
100% on the line, but bad.
Which is hard to do if you remember some of these offensive lines. So,
yeah, no, I understand that, but I think he's going to be back. So I think he's going to be coaching offensive line.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, and yeah. We'll see. How that goes.
What was his other question? Yeah, another question.
He didn't really have another question.
Yep, that was it.
Okay.
He just wanted to thank Brian for walking you back off the ledge a little.
I didn't think I was doing that.
Yeah, I don't know why he was ever concerned about the receiver position. I mean, they were young, but you get Tariq Black back, and you actually got some young guy. You got both Donovan Peoples-Jones and Nico Collins some time this year, which was sorely needed. Well, and now you have a receivers. Now you have Dan Enos as your receivers coach.
So do you feel confident that Enos can develop these guys at receiver?
He's not the receivers coach. The grad assistant is the receivers coach.
Okay. Well, again, my question is, are they going to develop these receivers next year?
You think that would be the case next year?
Yeah, Dan Enos has never coached wide receivers in his life.
I think Dan Enos. I mean,
he's going to have the title.
I think it was the case that the Joe Hastings coached receivers this year.
Yeah.
But I think you'll see.
For the record, Dan Enos was the wide receiver coach at Southern Illinois in 1997 and 1998.
Oh, oh, bang!
Right. So, Brian, now I meant it to just say this century. Just say this century.
Yes, thank you.
Be fine.
20 years ago.
I just want you to be fact.
When Fran Tarkenton was playing.
Against Roman Gabriel.
I mean, with the crop of freshmen that are rising sophomores, and if you could develop a guy like Crawford, that would be a lot for this offense.
Do or die for Crawford next year. We'll see.
734-998-1050. Tweet us at Michigan Insider. Email us at studio@wtk.com. Let's go to the phones and talk to, let's see who was next. Give me a second. We'll go to Eric in South Carolina. Eric, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Nothing much.
Hey, quick question for everybody. Michigan haven't, over the last, since Lloyd Carr left, we haven't really had any good offensive alignment. Are we doing a bad job in evaluating the guys we're bringing in, or is it coaching? Like, what exactly is it? Because it's like year after year, like even on the Drevno, and I'm going to tell you, if they bring Pep and Drevno back, if either one of those guys come back, which I'm pretty sure one of them probably will remain with the team, the fans are not going to be happy about that. Because name one guy that's gotten better under Drevno since he's been here. And we bringing all these coaches in for Arkansas. Hey, let's bring in offensive line coach, or let's go get Wisconsin's offensive line coach or Michigan State's offensive line coach. But Drevno's just not getting it done for me. So what do you guys think? Bad evaluations on the talent or bad coaching?
Well, it's always some of both. I mean, with Hoke, it was definitely both. I mean, they had a six-man offensive line coach where Kugler is the only one who pans out even a little bit. And part of that is like Logan Tuila-Tillman gets in trouble. That's not something you can predict. They bring in the guy.
Bosch.
Bosch had similar issues. They bring in the guy from Colorado who had a knee thing. So injuries, poor recruiting, bad evaluations, like it's pretty much hit for the cycle. And then Michigan inherited very little from Hoke in their first full recruiting year. They don't replace Swenson. They don't replace Devery Hamilton, and having those guys as second-year players this year would have helped at least give you another bullet in the chamber. Maybe not Swenson, but definitely Devery Hamilton, who was freaking starting for Stanford this year. So that's a big recruiting loss. And then they replaced him with Steven Spinels, but Spinels played center in the bowl game. So he's an interior offensive lineman, and they just didn't bring in any tackles. And now they changed that last year because they brought in a huge number of tackles, and then they move James Hudson there, so they're going to have a number of bullets in the chamber.
And this is where we see it. I mean, this is where we see the fortunes of the team rest mostly upon as far as how much improvement they make the offensive tackle position. I mean,
well, and for the interior lines, picking up one stunt, just one, please.
Yep.
So. I mean, I think it's fair to say, and we've been saying it for years now on this show, that Michigan's problems have been primarily on the offensive line. I mean, yeah, we've had some quarterback issues. That's been problematic too. But really, the shortcoming of the Harbaugh era so far is, you know, has been that we just haven't put together an offensive line that can sustain an offense. And I don't know whose fault it is. I don't know if it matters much, but it the reality is we just haven't done it there.
Well, other than Grant Newsom, this is these guys, Hudson, Filiaga, and Stuber.
Honigford.
These are the, you know, as far as the highly ranked 4-star guys, this is the his first wave. And they got to be ready to produce next
now?
Year. Yeah, got to be ready to produce right now.
Spring game, better
one,
bring it.
1 year in the hopper, and they got to be ready to go because, I mean, I think the quarterback position is going to be fine. I do.
I agree with that.
I think the quarterback position is going to be fine if they don't get their quarterback murdered. I seen Devin Gardner. I know what happens.
We got to get to a break. Be back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket. All right, so guys, wish we had more time, but let's spend what time we have left talking some Michigan basketball. Nail biter, you know, of a loss to Purdue. I think Michigan got screwed at the end.
I thought we were going to talk basketball in the last.
This is basketball.
No, the previous segment because they let off with sabotage. So I was like, oh, we're going to talk some basketball.
I know the home team's supposed to get those calls in clutch situations, man. So
a couple of guys I want you to talk about with the time we have left. Xavier Simpson, and I want Craig's take on Xavier Simpson in particular. And then Isaiah Livers. I mean, really, it seems like the young fella's coming on.
Well, you got to talk about Duncan Robinson, too, if you want to talk about Livers.
Craig.
Simpson's coming along. He's doing, I think, a pretty good job. His assist turnover ratio has been good in the Big Ten, really not too bad the whole year. And he's a phenomenal defender. You've got to have him on the court, of course. And Michigan's best team right now, certainly their best defensive team, is Z, Muhammad, Matthews, Livers, and Teske. That's their best team. And you can't pair, and I hope it's obvious at this point, you can't pair Duncan together with Wagner. That's
I don't know if it's obvious.
Well, it should be.
They're starting.
I don't know. It to me, that's a mistake. But Livers did get 27 minutes, I think, in the game against Purdue, and that's probably about right. I'd rather see him starting than having to come off the bench and be down 15 points because our defense is civil-like when you've got this quality of defensive player available. I mean, I'm really optimistic about this team. I think it really has things. I know I always rail about not liking depth, but I think in this case, you know, the depth of this team might be a really really a good thing, and because it allows them to play hard without worrying too much about fouls, and you have a certain flexibility with offensive guys, particularly like Wagner, and defensive guys who can also play some offense. So I'm really up on this team. I think it's been a remarkable coaching job by the entire staff, and they're fun.
The young guys are really coming along. What about Livers?
Well, Livers is pretty limited offensively right now, but he can be. You know, he just can be a 3-and-D guy, and you know, allowing Robinson to play one with Teske and two against the 7th and 8th guys on the opposition as a microwave is a much better use of Michigan's resources, and I think it's past time, just like Craig, to make that switch.
Yeah, I wondered openly, Ed, if he felt could he just feel more comfortable if he surveys the area and then comes off the bench? But to Brian's point, you're also, you know, maybe facing a reserve as opposed to a starter.
Well, Duncan Robinson got completely lost on a defensive possession at the beginning of the second half, and he did not see the court again, I don't think, the entire game. I like Livers' shot. I think that's a good looking shot. I think he can contribute some offense. He does some rebounding. And big picture wise, Purdue's a top 5 team by the numbers right now. And to lose a close game to a top 5 team when they shot 57% from 3, I think you got to be optimistic about this team going forward.
All right. Real quick take as we get out of here on the Michigan State game Saturday.
Well, we're a little better than Rutgers, so we got a shot.
Ed?
Michigan State's one of the top teams in the nation, so we got to bring the best game.
Craig?
We're not winning that game.
Come on!
We're not winning the game, but things are looking really good for this team, and I think they, by the end of the year, it could be another Beeline deal where they make some noise.
All right, we got to get out of here. Until next week, folks, thanks for listening to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK, The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, Accumulus Station.
Get it better!